podcast to honor the gods.
This better come with a sacrifice.
Deus Ex Media.
Hello and welcome to Content and Capable, a podcast all about following your passions while still feeling like a proper adult. My name's Sam and I'm your host. This week I spoke with That Psych MP all about her amazing work in psychology and uplifting Gen Z. Welcome to Content and Capable, Laura. It's lovely to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I was excited to be invited on.
Yeah, I always love to give a little bit of a rundown into like where I found people. And to be honest, I feel like I'm drawing to the end of the 2022 season for Content and Capable, and it feels like it's like the TikTok season where I've just like keep finding people. I'm like, oh, this is a really interesting person talking about cool things on TikTok. And it's like, it's also like the first social media platform that I feel like a native of as someone who picked up social media really late. So like when I saw you especially championing Generation Z and Alpha into, you know, these great, you know, interesting campaigns that, you know, my generation loves, you know, talking about the uncomfortable parts of a situation, I was intrigued. And then, you know, your background, you know, in a whole, in your medical fields as well, it's like, wow, you know, there's just so much, there's such a wealth of knowledge.
Well, thank you very much.
For those who might not 100% recognize your voice, do you want to explain who you are a little bit?
Sure, sure. I am on TikTok and my handle there is ThatPsychNP. And I do a lot of mental health education as well as trying to break stigmas. But more recently, I've gotten into a lot of Gen Z and Gen Alpha content because I think there's a lot of support that's needed there. And it very much ties into my mental health work. But that's how I think most people would know me. I'm not really, I don't have a huge account on a lot of other platforms. This seems to be the one that that picked up.
It's interesting to see, like, I've spoken to some people who do work on other platforms of like what platforms stick and what platforms don't. Someone made a joke on TikTok, it was like, oh, you know, seeing Twitter is on its way out. You know, I'm going to have to use TikTok like Twitter and just tweet random thoughts or random interactions I've had. It's going to be fascinating to see how we adapt where it almost feels like a different mode of communication, right? And so things, some things fly, some things don't.
It really does. You're absolutely right, because I still can't get the hang of Twitter. I mean, I obviously know how to use it, but I'm not, I mean, I'm used to having like a video where there's a beginning, middle, end. It's not like a thought. It's kind of more planned out. And so to be on Twitter, I feel very lost. And man, it's vicious on there. I thought TikTok was vicious. Twitter is vicious. It was very surprising.
It gets incredibly personal incredibly quickly. I'm a journalist by trade, so theoretically I have to use Twitter. And I've been told all of my career that I have to use Twitter. Not that I necessarily agree, but I'm on there fairly reluctantly. Anyway, I had a story about bicycle lanes. I was talking about the city I live in. We're hosting the Olympics in 2032. And so they've got all these huge infrastructure projects they're doing. And one of them, the city council has announced, is that they're going to widen the lanes on one of the streets adjoining where a new train station is being built to increase, because it's being increased pedestrian flow. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And I was chatting about it. Someone pointed out to me that there's actually no room for cyclists in the plans. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting angle. I'm going to run with that. I wrote this story about how there's no room for cyclists in this plan, and it's actually incredibly important that we include cyclists in our urban planning. And then I posted it to Twitter, and I have never seen people more upset about bike lanes in my life. It was like...
What?
Accusing me of, like, unfair reporting and, like, I'm like, great, you know.
I don't get it.
it's a, like a fairly inconsequential story with a very clear angle and a very clear point. Nah, no, it's almost like there was like, I put nuance in this story, but well, as soon as you go take it to Twitter, the nuance gets stripped away. You're like, well, now I've got this incredibly opinionated person yelling at me, but I'm going to deal with it.
Yes, it's so true. And you just don't know things that have stuck on TikTok and have went viral, completely bombed on Twitter. So it's a very, very different platform. If it does go down, frankly, I'll be kind of happy. But, you know, I'm still, maybe it's because I'm inept with managing Twitter.
Part of me appreciates the way that people communicate on Twitter and how it forces you to be concise. And I think early TikTok, that was part of the appeal, I think, for me as well, is that it forced me to be concise with my viewing, but also with my speaking. But the more I'm on there, I'm like, this is just gets like a little bit shittier and shittier every day. It's like, oh, okay, there's this corner of the internet that exists that I thought had died when we decided that that was a bad idea. No, it still exists.
It still exists. Yes.
But yeah, so before you got even started on TikTok, you're a psychiatric nurse practitioner. I did a bit of Googling because I was like, I know that this term has got something to do with mental health, but I wasn't sure. And I found out it's a very American term. Did you want to explain a little bit about your work in mental health?
Sure. So it's pretty interesting because I have a very unconventional route into the current position I'm in. I actually started out as a licensed clinical social worker, which is they can work in various roles, but I was a therapist, graduated my bachelor's in psychology, went to graduate school for my master's in social work. And with that, you can practice therapy. So I did that for quite a few years and noticed a very big divide between the clinical side of things and the medical side of things, like the psychiatrists, if you will, the people who are prescribing the medications. A lot of time there was a lot of differing and thought about what was going on with the client. So I said, this would be a really interesting mix to have somebody who has the degree, training, and background in clinical work or doing therapy, as well as the prescribing and medical role. So I went back to school, I became a registered nurse, and then worked as a psychiatric nurse for a few years, and went and got my master's in nursing. And in the United States, we have what's called psychiatric nurse practitioners or advanced practice nurses. They're kind of the term nurse practitioner and advanced practice nurse are kind of synonymous. And basically what that means is we've achieved higher education, a master's degree or more, and we have prescription privileges. So my function now is very, very similar, almost, you know, pretty on par with that of a psychiatrist in terms of meeting with people, providing medications if it's required or necessary, evaluations, diagnosing, things like that. So that's what I do in my day-to-day life now, but I have that clinical background. But it was quite a lot of years in school altogether.
It's one of those things that, like, because you have both sides of that training, it's like, oh, wow, you've got all this, like, extra stuff that I've got to learn on top of, you know, what you do day to day. It's fascinating. The more Americans I speak to, we always compare like health systems and education systems, but even like beyond the, like the general stuff of like, you know, socialized healthcare versus capitalized healthcare. There's like really interesting, like changes in the way that like mental health care is approached. And it's like, it's different. It's not wrong. It's just different. And it's fascinating. And it's, as someone who like has gone through the mental health care system and been on, you know, every Australian who's aware of the mental health system here, on what's called a mental health care plan, which is like a theoretically subsidized like mental health care placement, it's so fascinating to then like speak to people who work in mental health or who have been very familiar with the mental health care system in the US, and it's different. Like, it's, you know, much more segmented. I go to my general practitioner or my home doctor, and they could give me an assessment right then and there. And yes, I could go and see a psychiatrist and a psychologist and a therapist and, you know, all the rest of the ists. But it's so fascinating different. It's amazing.
There's a lot lacking in our system here, and especially in mental health care, because it is so stigmatized still very much. And I'm not sure if it's that way in Australia, but that's one thing I do on TikTok is fight that stigma, because we still have a lot of it here. It's the scapegoat often for many kind of negative societal events. It's something that I wish was better, and I'm working to hopefully get change on a larger scale to get the mental health system more accessible to people, because not everybody has access to it. And it varies by state how much access you have to it. So that's not okay. And that's a lot of the reason why I got onto TikTok to do what I do, to hopefully create change on a larger scale.
Yeah. And I think like worldwide mental health has got this pretty bad stigma around it. I think especially among students. Look, the amount of inappropriate jokes I've made about my mental health in the last 5 years is probably cause for concern if anyone was really listening. But, you know, it is a fascinating, you know, thing of there is that stigma, and combating it isn't just, you can't just do it from the doctor's office. You've got to do it everywhere you go. It's really amazing. And look, I think it's changing. Like, I'll speak to like siblings of mine, and even my siblings who aren't like very much aware of their mental health, even then, like I've had more productive conversations than I feel like I could have with older generations about mental health, and you know, much more open conversations with friends around my age, you know, my generation, who are much more open about, you know, their struggles than I even felt like 5 years ago I could talk about.
It's very different. And that's exactly, and it's a perfect segue into like the, almost like the Gen Z conversation, because it is so different than it was even when I was growing up. And I'm, oh gosh, I'm going to be 39 this year. So I you know, aside from having the, you know, the issue of dealing with that, but even when I was growing up, like there was no conversations about it.
Oh, yeah. And, like, even then, like, when there was a conversation about it, it's like, you're all right? Yeah, I'm fine. Because you don't want to, like, have a awkward conversation, like an uncomfortable conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrifying. I remember, of all things, I went on antidepressants in my final year of high school. And it was a very fascinating conversation to have of, like, I didn't know what was wrong, because I didn't understand what depression exactly was. I knew what it was because my mother had it, but I didn't realize. And my mother had to point out and go, we need to go see a doctor. We need to go and sort this because you're not okay. And that, and I think my mother was like, I can't handle you anymore at this point. You need to go and seek professional help. But you know, it's such a fascinating conversation to have. It's like, you know, even people who just don't recognize they're in a mental health crisis as well.
Right.
So cool. So then, obviously, you know, you've done this amazing work for years. How did you end up on TikTok?
It was a very kind of odd process. I was very late to the game with everything. And I was a Facebook person and, you know, connecting with just friends and, you know, nothing large scale. But when the pandemic hit, I was seeing so many people around here not understanding how to wear a mask properly, how to glove properly, you know, that it defeats the purpose if you are, you know, touching things with gloves on in the food store. This is back when, like, when everything first began, you know, touching things and then touching your face and then thinking, you know, that's okay. So I was like, there's so much education that needs to be done. My sister had said, hey, you know, take a look at these funny dog videos on TikTok. She would send me these random funny animal videos. And I'm like, oh, that's cute, you know, haha. And then I started saying, like, I can't really reach a lot of people on Facebook. And I made a couple of videos for people to post on Facebook to say, this is how you properly put on and take off gloves. This is how a mask should fit. And I got such a response from just family and friends that I said, maybe we need to see this like kind of on a larger scale, because I didn't know how to really grow that on Facebook. I was on TikTok. I started kind of watching more and more videos. I said, there's really like a gap here for mental health. And not only that, but the mental health topics that I was seeing coming up were very kind of pop culture and like almost like a Cosmo quiz as opposed to legitimate education about it. And I was seeing a lot of incorrect things, which really, really irritated me. So I said, you know what? Let me just make a few videos, kind of see what happens, and then, you know, we'll kind of reevaluate. So it was just for fun. And I didn't think a single person would want to listen to anything I had to say. Truly, truly, I did not think that. And then it just, it kind of just took off.
Yeah, it's weird. A few people I've spoken to, especially on TikTok, where the algorithm is like, seems to be just in hyperdrive all the time. It's just like, oh, I just blew up, you know, I think there's this aspect of like, you know, to be a YouTube star, you've got to put all this effort in, or to be, you know, an Instagram model, you've got to, you know, do all this stuff. But then on TikTok, somehow it's the complete opposite. It's like random people who would have never have gotten this opportunity to share their stories have been able to share their stories. It's fascinating.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I still can't figure out how people get big on Instagram. I really don't. I can't figure it out. I don't have, like, the cool lighting and all these, like, things to, you know, get an Instagram perfect picture. I'm like, no, I throw on a ring light, I hop on TikTok, I talk for a minute, and then that's it. It's done. I'm like, this is easy. Yeah. I can do this.
It's like, here, let me have, you know, and I think the part of TikTok that I really love is that it is a stream of consciousness from anywhere from like 7 seconds through to 3 or 10 minutes. And it's like, oh, wow, there's this whole stream of consciousness where it's incredibly relatable to watch someone think through like an issue or reason through an issue. And it makes sense. Or if you don't agree with like an opinion that's being said, you understand where they're coming from and the unique perspective that they have, because it's like someone speaking and it's their stream. You can almost like see their cogs turning. It's amazing.
And I think it creates and fosters more meaningful connections amongst creators, amongst followers. Like, I even have followers that don't create content, but they have commented enough and I've engaged in enough conversation where I do feel like I know them and they feel like they know me. And to be able to create meaningful relationships because you're actually seeing other people who look like they're talking to you like almost like we are now, like face to face. That's what it feels like. So I think that it's a different kind of platform, in that at least I feel like I can make more meaningful connections that way with people.
Yeah, it's It is, and it almost fosters this empathy as well, that we don't see on other platforms. We're talking about Twitter before, you know, there is a lack of empathy there. And, you know, Instagram, although it's heading back in the direction of unfiltered, you know, raw content, we are seeing this discussion of, we can't be ourselves on, you know, all social media websites, but somehow on TikTok, I don't know what it is. They must just have the perfect mix of pandemic and short videos that have meant that we are like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Mm-hmm. And we are so much more open to listening as well. Mm-hmm. You know, a minute's not that long in the grand scheme of things. And it's like, I've got a minute of time to hear what this person has to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that especially for people like me who have ADHD, and I wasn't even diagnosed until like last year, but you know, those 1 minute, 3 minute clips, they were perfect for me because I got to kind of hear everything instead of watching a 15, 20 minute long Facebook video of somebody just kind of going on about something. So it was like perfect bite size snippets of somebody's life that I was able to take and digest and then move on to the next one.
Yeah, it's, and I think that like having a short, digestible, and this is where I have huge issues with like long form journalism or like the 3-hour movies that we're seeing to be just the norm in cinemas now. It's like, you've got to put something that's digestible. You know, we're constantly told in academia that we have to be writing in a concise manner, and yet the media that we consume doesn't reflect the concise manner we're required to communicate in, but then TikTok does. And I think that that's probably where that winning formula really starts kicking in.
Right. Now, if they would just now moderate appropriately, then I think it would be much better. That's a whole different conversation.
Please. Oh, sometimes I just go through like a comment section on TikTok or like hear vaguely about random beef or a terrible thing happening or, you know, and I'm like, how was this let to happen? Like, who let this happen? Who hurt who? Who what bribed who? You know, and I love drama. I love gossip, you know, that people... My brother would be killing me right now because he goes, you know, Sam, you need to stop being so invested in gossip. But as a journalist, I'm like, ooh, I want more. I want more of these juicy details.
Yes.
But, you know, at the same time, I look at it like, and I'm like, wow, moderation is like scary, you know, and you've got to take a position and make a decision. And I don't know, TikTok's like kind of like, we can be impartial. It's like, oof, it's not working.
But that's the thing, they're not impartial. The educational, yeah, accurate, informational content gets suppressed, where the drama-filled, inaccurate misinformation very much gets promoted, it seems. So that's been a frustration of mine and a lot of other medical creators for over a year at this point, going on 2 years.
Yeah, it's a fascinating aspect. You know, we have educational YouTube. It's a very interesting part of the YouTube space, and you know, I love that part of YouTube. The fact that I can learn things, and TikTok, you know, they advertise themselves as this. You know, you can learn everything, and they're moving towards being more of a search browser, a browser rather than a. And it's fascinating, don't get me wrong, but it's like, is this the right way? Or like, you know, my thoughts all over the place.
That's okay.
Like the way that like there are so many, because there are so many different perspectives, education, like what's the difference between education and observation? And then like us being able to discern that, it's a very fascinating aspect that I'm not quite sure how we will get through.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of changes coming up. I don't know. I haven't heard of anything, but that's just what my feeling is.
Yeah, I feel that one as well, because it's like there is, and you as an educational and in the medical field as well, you know, it's a hard part of trying to like defend not just your personal viewpoints, but also your professional viewpoints as well. It's like, you know, I think that this is best, you know, based on my professional experience. It's like, you know, I used to drag Facebook on this, but it's, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, I believe this and I'm going to keep, you know, in my beliefs, but like with TikTok's algorithm, it makes it like 10 times worse on top of
that. Yes. Yes. Because it presents it to other people and it spreads the message, where Facebook was or used to be kind of very limited to like your friends and people that you knew and, you know, your contacts. But this is like stranger from across the world. We think you might like this video. And this video is like, you know, promoting a lot of negative things. And it's just kind of like bringing all of the negativity together sometimes, or misinformation, or whatever it is. So I think that's like the super concerning part, where Facebook, we kind of even still kept like into our like little bubbles, if you will.
Yeah, it's a really interesting aspect that I didn't think that I was going to have to think about too much as a communicator myself. And so obviously working in the medical field and things like that, what's been your experience with then having to basically self-moderate and like call out the bad actors or the people in your field of expertise that are making things worse instead of building things up?
Sure. So there's definitely, and my page has a lot of it on it. I have, I think, like a playlist dedicated to it. But whether it's calling out medical professionals that are not in the mental health specialty, making fun of psychiatric patients, which I find to be incredibly damaging, that's something I take very seriously, because so often I have people commenting on my video saying, thank you, because frankly, I'm scared to go get help. I'm scared that I'm going to run into a nurse or a doctor like this who is joking about physical restraints or joking about chemically sedating me, or thinks it's funny when I'm in a psychiatric crisis, making fun of a psychiatric crisis. I would rather stay at home and suffer. That's not okay to me. That is something that I feel very passionately that we should be really just fighting against across the board, because people need to have trust in us that when they come to us, that they're going to get cared for and that they're going to be treated with respect and dignity. So I've been doing that quite a bit. And it is met with a lot of pushback, surprisingly, from many people in the medical community. So that's been very interesting. Hearing people, particularly nurses, from other specialties saying, well, this is my dark humor, this is the way I cope, we're getting treated, you know, very poorly during the pandemic, and this is our way to kind of vent about it. Well, that's fine. Vent about it in a private nurses group. Vent about it in a private, you know, with your colleagues in the break room. And I get a lot of heat for saying this. I do. I get a ton of heat for saying this. But it's not appropriate to make psych patients the butt of jokes. If you think about it, when's the last time we've ever seen a group of either nurses or doctors or medical EMTs, medical professionals, making fun of like a cancer patient or a stroke survivor? Yeah. It's always psych, dementia, or substance use. And that is what prevents people, A, from getting help. It perpetuates the stigma. And that's why I speak out against it, as well as people in the psych field who are saying, you know, kind of ableist things a lot of times, like, oh, you just need to get out into the sunlight, you know, and if you've had depression for 6 years and it hasn't gotten better, it means you haven't worked hard enough. No. Like that, no, we can't. That's not the message that needs to be sent out. That's a very, very poor, ableist type of message. That's something I learned on TikTok. How ableism very much creeps into the mental health field. So I know that was like a long kind of rambling thing, but it is one of like my very passionate things that I do on TikTok, because I see so often people just making fun of mental health patients. And that's just, it's not okay with me. And I'm going to say something every single time.
Yeah. And, as you said, you know, you call out this kind of behavior. What kind of have you had positive interactions when you've called out this kind of behavior and someone's like corrected themselves?
Yes. So that does happen. I would say that if I were to kind of give an estimate on percentages, I would say maybe 30% of the time, someone comes back and says, you know what, I didn't really think about it that way. I'm going to do better. I'll take the video down. You know, I'll issue an apology, whatever it is. Some people will kind of defend themselves to the death. And you know, this is my way of coping, all that kind of stuff. Leave me alone. But even if that 30%, I still consider a victory, because they're going to be less likely to do it again in the future. And if they do, they might catch themselves. And that's why I have like a video pinned to the top of my account on TikTok, where I ask people, put in the comments, what do these videos about making fun of patients, whether it's medical or mental health, how do they affect you? So this way people can read. And I direct every person I call out to watch that video and say, look at the comments. Yeah. This is what you're doing. This is what you were doing to people. You don't want to believe me? Fine. Look at the people in my comments on this video and see how this affects them. So even if I get that 30%, that's okay. For the rest of the 70, they at least know that if they're going to do something and put something like that on there, then me and a couple of my friends, some of which have much bigger accounts than I do, will say something about it. So at least they know. So it's, I kind of see it as a victory.
It's one of those things where it's hard on TikTok because it is so disjointed and disorganized, where it's like hard to organize. You know, Facebook, you've got like groups and things, and Twitter, you can kind of follow a thread of hashtags or something. But it's quite hard on a platform like TikTok, where you often see a video and you don't see it again. But being able to call out people on their language that is making other people feel uncomfortable, it almost feels like a form of moderation, where it's like, oh, you know, we're trying to moderate for, you know, things that make people uncomfortable. But then also, like, on top of it, it's like, oh, here's the education twist of, like, here's why this, like, doesn't work. And it, I don't know, to me, it feels really fulfilling because it doesn't feel like there are people shouting into the void. It just feels like, oh, wait, there is a community here who are trying to educate other people about it.
Absolutely. And it definitely, I've had many people come back and say, you know, watching your videos makes me, amongst other people, not just me, watching your videos has made me feel comfortable to seek out mental health care again, knowing that there are people that have those values out there that, you know, care for us, that don't make fun of us, that don't stigmatize us. That has prompted me to go and seek mental health care. So those are worth it. It's why I do it. And that's the satisfying part, because it's not just content for me. If somebody apologizes, somebody says, wow, I'll do better. You know, I didn't realize that this was, you know, something negative that I was doing or perpetuating stigma. I take my video down. I don't leave it up. You know, it's not about views.
Yeah. And I think this is where, and we saw a lot of this when like a whole bunch of influencers got in trouble for a variety of things. I remember the Logan Paul incident, the Forrest incident, but then like, you know, other influencers doing things that were either not appropriate or acting in a way that wasn't faithful to their viewers or that wasn't faithful to their employees and things like that, you know? And it was just, it was fascinating to see the internet call them out, go, hey, this is not on. And the influencer having to make a decision of whether they were going to readjust or, actually there was three options, readjust, decide to ignore everything's going on, almost Shane Dawson-esque, but then also pretend to readjust and not actually really change anything, which was a whole aspect that you forget that, like, as you said when you got on the call, you know, social media is really manicured, and then you go meet someone in real life, it's like, oh wow, you're a totally different human being than I, you know, expected you to be. It's fascinating.
Yes. Yes, I 100% agree.
Yeah, lots of weird observations. It feels like really affirming to speak to someone who's like creating positive change on like platforms that I love. It's amazing.
I'm trying very, very hard. Sometimes I wake up and I'm like, what am I doing? Nothing's happening, you know, but we're making progress. I feel slowly but surely I'm trying.
Speaking of positive change, you've been really championing Gen Z and Generation Alpha as well, on a lot of causes that we feel particularly passionate about. Why did you start, like, kind of highlighting these kind of interesting movements and actions that my generation has been doing?
Yeah, I very much admire you guys. When I first got into the field of mental health, I was working with Gen Z, the youngest Gen Z, like the very beginnings of Gen Z, and they have been my kind of population since I've started in mental health. Being on Facebook, being on TikTok, being on all these social media sites, as well as, you know, watching TV, I started seeing that a lot of the older generations just were making these very incorrect comments about Gen Z as a whole, that they're lazy, that they're entitled, that, you know, they don't put hard work in, they just want everything handed to them. And working with them every day and hearing what they go through, I'm like, this isn't correct. You know, this is maybe what they see from the outside, but they really truly don't understand why they're perceiving it that way. It's because of the fact that they're not being supported. There's a lot of traumas going on. There's a lot of they're being exposed to a lot of things via social media that they can't control and are being just told to like kind of deal with it. And we've never had to experience that in our generation. So I thought maybe if I were to, as an older person, as an elder millennial, to get on and to say, hey, look, that's not right. And they really are doing amazing things. Let me show you and tell you why they are as amazing as they are. So this way you can get a different perspective and hopefully start to support them a little bit more, because they're going to be the ones taking care of us. and we have to support them. We can't keep calling them, you know, all kinds of incorrect or labeling them, I should say, with very incorrect kind of stereotypes, because they're far better off than we ever were, is emotional intelligence wise and strength wise and resiliency.
It feels like what we should have done when, and I remember vaguely hearing murmurs of this, but like the whole, the boomers versus the millennials, right? Where like the millennials, the boomers were accusing the millennials of being lazy, and the millennials were accusing the boomers of just being, you know, completely wrong or whatever, you know, and it felt like it just kept going in this negative cycle, and it all, like, pushing back against that cycle, because it is, it's habit to go, oh, the people older than me are stupid and old, and the people younger than me just don't get it, you know, but it is a fascinating concept to kind of push against that theoretical societal norm.
Mm-hmm. And I think also it highlighting the wonderful things and just how resilient they are has been giving people like myself and others hope, because we see a lot of, or we're collectively feeling a lot of, especially in America, I'm trying to find the right appropriate word to use for it, but we're feeling a lot of hopelessness in terms of just kind of the craziness that we're seeing, pardon the expression. But, if, you know, we should have been thinking we should have been so much further along than this. We're actually turning the clocks back. Like, we're like back into like 1920s, 30s in terms of like what people are trying to change it into. So knowing that Gen Z is fighting as hard as they are and highlighting that and showing people that this is how hard they are fighting has been giving not just the people who follow me hope, but me hope as well. Because when Roe v. Wade was overturned, I mean, I cried for about 3 days straight and I felt very hopeless. So it's also giving me hope. It's almost therapeutic for me as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think, you know, our generation's been told no so many times. It's like, as soon as I think as soon as a critical mass of us became adults, we're like, why are we being told no? We can just tell ourselves yes and then just do whatever we want, you know. And, you know, middle finger to the systems that have told us that we can't do things or we need to wait to do something. And I think that it's, especially watching it in the US, like here in Australia, don't get me wrong, it's similar kinds of movements, you know. Theoretically, reproductive rights have been a vague grey area in the Australian legal system, and they slowly over the last 10 years have been codified into law. But, you know, other things like climate action, which is really important to us here in Australia, or other really important causes that just, you know, may not make it to an American news cycle. But watching, you know, my generation organize around that thing, and then watching, you know, especially in things like Black Lives Matter, watching people go, we can expand it beyond, you know, the single thing of, you know, African-American lives to all BIPOC people, you know. Mm. And then we had a really important conversation here in Australia about how we treat Indigenous and First Nations people, and and colonialism and recognizing colonialism in a modern context as well, you know. And it was a fascinating conversation we got to have, but it wouldn't have been possible without, you know, without the movements that have sparked more movement. It's almost like a tsunami,
right? And the social media has been a game changer in both positive and negative ways, but in this sense, very positive. Because, you know, even if we had strong feelings as children, like the elder millennials, we weren't able to organize the same way that you know, Gen Z and even Gen Alpha, the older Gen Alphas are starting to even organize. So it's been amazing. And I think that's what's so threatening to the older generations, is that you guys have figured out, because you've been basically grown up with this, how to mobilize and get your voices out and to create change so quickly that it's scaring those old guys in politics, those old white guys in politics. So it's been so positive that you guys can really work together and to really just start to also understand other people too, because you can hear how things affect other people, how being on the receiving end of racism, homophobia, transphobia, you are able to see how that affects people across the world. If social media didn't exist, you would only know how it affected people in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, 100%. And it's one of those things as well that I think the internet has created a lot of empathy there's this assumption that the internet's a cold place, right? And, you know, that people aren't keen on being nice to other people and aren't keen on, you know, doing nice things for other people without some sort of transaction happening. But as we said, you know, being able to hear people's thought processes and people's perspectives in short, manageable chunks, I think we've almost started creating a more understanding and more wholesome space to exist in on the internet.
Absolutely. And that's why I use that phrase, like, Gen Z is we, not me, because their empathy is, and obviously, I, you know, it's not a blanket kind of, like, everybody who is of Gen Z age has amazing empathy. We know that's not true, but generally speaking, and the overarching theme has been the empathy from this generation far exceeds previous generations, 100%. And that's an idea and a notion that that's a hill I'm willing to die on to prove.
Yeah. And it's fascinating because, you know, we're seeing more people understand their mental and physical health more. You know, the internet keeps progressing this I think one of the most eye-opening ones for me was when Elise Myers realized that she had a thyroid problem. People were like, oh, it's your thyroid. Have you checked your thyroid? And she went and checked it. I was like, oh, wait, it was my thyroid. And it's like, thanks, internet, for, like, getting me to ask something I would have never have thought of. But, you know, having that, being able to empathize with people and then being able to offer support. And it's like, well, here's my perspective. And this is how I experience this, and I'd love to give, you know, my point of view. And it's amazing. And, you know, you do such an amazing job as well of highlighting those different points of view and having a conversation about the organization that Gen Z does when there is empathy.
Oh, yeah, and it's such a viciousness in the most empathic of ways. And I know that sounds like a complete oxymoron, but it's true. It is 100% true. Like, Gen Z could be incredibly vicious because they are just so empathic. And they, if you're hurting one of them, that means you're hurting all of us. And that's not okay.
It's a fascinating time as well, because politically, at least for you guys, you know, you're on the eve of the midterms, and if anyone's listening to this and regardless of whether you live in the United States or Australia, but if there is an election going on, and I'm incredibly, incredibly privileged to say this, but please go and vote, you know, in whatever aspect you can, or engage in the democracy in whatever way you can. You know, it's compulsory here in Australia, in the US it isn't, in a lot of countries it isn't, in other places it's incredibly hard to exercise your democratic rights. But I do highly, you know, promote people to engage in the democracy that they have. Obviously, we've got midterm elections coming up, lots of anger and violence and misunderstanding as well. Not saying that anyone is in the wrong or anyone's in the right, you know, that's a perspective thing. But, you know, it's fascinating to see how people can take, you know, a position on a topic to an extreme without thinking through, like, the logical consequences of it. And I think of all things, you know, the women's reproductive rights was a really great example of, like, okay, let's take this to its, you know, its logical extreme and see what happens.
And it was and is a huge dumpster fire that's still having like repercussions, you know, to this day. And it's still just kind of getting worse and worse and worse because they thought that this was it. And I won't get on my soapbox about, you know, what they thought it would do versus what it will do. But it's, there's a lot of scary things happening right now and everybody is very much feeling it. And I would say a good way to describe what's going on now is just scary. It is, at least especially in America, it is.
And like the scariness, as much as like we don't want to feel scared, right? But like on one part of it, it's like the scariness is also like uniting a huge chunks of disparate groups that would have organized themselves independently, right? Is this like, I don't know, from your perspective, do you think this is a tipping point in the way that we communicate our political beliefs?
I definitely think so. I think over the last at least 4 years, maybe more recently in the last 2 years, people have been using social media more widely to not just discuss their political beliefs, but people are hearing others' political beliefs. Some very extremist beliefs we didn't necessarily hear. And now because it's being shared widely, it's almost kind of emboldened the extremes to kind of come out of the woodwork and start making their presence known. And that, I believe, is very much lending to a tipping point where when we have these extremes coming out and saying some pretty scary things, that's really causing everybody to kind of say, we're fighting against this. And I think that that's the tipping point that we're getting at. You know, we're seeing what is at stake. We're truly seeing everything that's at stake. And now everybody's saying, okay, this isn't something we can't just not vote anymore. It's not an option not to do this anymore. We have to do something.
Yeah. And it's almost emboldening to sit, you know, to sit here and go, we're scared. And that's totally fine to feel scared because it's going to make us better at what we do, right? You know, we're not going to hide in a corner, you know. We're sick of hiding in the corner, but we're here to push forward and to stop things, you know, stop things from getting worse.
And I think a lot of people may not have voted unless these kind of extreme things started coming out of the woodwork like we've seen over the last couple of years. And I'm not going to say that this all happened for a good reason because there are some very scary things going on. But I think that politics now looks very different. Political issues now look very different than they did even 15 years ago. And I said it in one of my videos and took a lot of heat for it that, you know, especially in American politics, when I was growing up, the winner of a presidential election, if it wasn't your guy, it was like, okay, you know, I don't really care for his economic, you know, views. I really don't necessarily care for his foreign policy, but we'll be okay. But now it's quite literally this candidate is voting against my existence. And it's never been like that before. So it's very different than when I was growing up. You didn't think that your existence was at risk 15 years ago when, you know, we were doing midterms and presidential elections.
The reporting feels like journalists who have engaged in the political landscape for years are surprised that there's now so much investment in like a midterm election rather than this whole scared approach to, it's too hard, I'm just not going to bother, you know? Mm-hmm. It's now like not emboldened, but we are way more understanding of what's at stake when we choose to vote, when we choose not to vote, and then who we choose to vote for. It's fascinating because you don't get to see it very often.
Right.
And so, you know, you created these videos uplifting, you know, Gen Z movements and, you know, Gen Alpha as well to an extent. I keep forgetting they're pretty much adults at this point. And and pushing against, you know, things that they believe in are wrong. What was some of the initial reception that you got on those kind of videos?
You know, a lot of it was just overwhelmingly positive. Of course, there was always the few trolls that would come in the videos and say, well, that's, you know, they're just, you know, they are lazy and everyone, you know, and of course people would just get on them and rip them and prove them otherwise and completely drag them. But overwhelmingly it was positive, and it was not only older generation saying, wow, like this is really great to see, this gives me hope. It was Gen Z also coming into the comments and saying, I feel heard, I feel seen, I feel validated. So I feel like it's kind of serving a double purpose, because it's actually for many of them, as per the comments that I've gotten, it's been meaningful to kind of get that validation that their hard work, their resilience isn't going unnoticed. Overwhelmingly, it has been generally incredibly positive, which I was so glad to see, and why I kept making those videos. Always get the few trolls. You're always going to have that happen. But, you know, it was very surprising. I thought I was going to get a lot more pushback than I did. And I'm glad to see that overwhelmingly it's been very positive. And now, like, you know, some people that follow me are calling like Gen Z to come help on things in other videos. And they're like, where's the Gen Z? Have them come in. They can take care of this. In fun ways, you know, not to put everything on their shoulders, but it's been very, very positive.
Yeah. It's a very fascinating thing, you know, at least in Australia, we're quite self-deprecating, and there is this culture of like, it's tall poppy syndrome. You know, you don't want to be the person to stand out, because you're just going to get cut down. But, you know, then you see, you know, other people moving. It's like, well, I've got to find a way to not get on the bandwagon, but, you know, be a part of the change that's occurring. And it is energizing to see that, you know, then other people are also paying attention. It's not just, you know, my peers that are paying attention. It's the, you know, my parents and their peers and my grandparents and their peers are paying attention. And then, you know, my younger siblings, I have some quite young siblings who are also paying attention to the conversations that we have. And like an acknowledgement as well that like young people can have adult conversations. My parents are always of the line of like, this is not quite mature for you. Head to bed, we'll have this over a cup of tea, you know, I have many a memory of trying to listen through walls to try to hear what my parents and uncles and aunts are talking about.
Yeah, but you guys can engage in those conversations. Whereas like, you know, when I was that age, I wasn't able to, because we weren't exposed to that. We were not exposed to all of that. But, you know, for the most part, you guys have more meaningful conversations than the older generations, the people who are actually like making these laws, you know, they have in terms of like the wherewithal and understanding and knowledge.
I think it's also like, as well as like, I think it's another important part of it is like sitting and listening to the conversations and watching especially my parents. My parents aren't on the internet very much at all. And watching the way that they think about the world around them. And it's like, how do they process the world around them? And what does that mean to them? And it's fascinating to watch, because it's like, oh, wait a second. That's why you think this. That's why you're doing it this way. And then understanding that, and then being able to use that understanding to explain why it's wrong or right, or why this opinion should also be considered. You know, my father works in the military. Yeah. We have conversations all the time about world politics and the importance of things. And I ask him plenty of questions, don't get me wrong, but he also asks me plenty of questions, because I've not to toot my own horn too much, but I've managed to communicate to him in a way that he understands as well. You know, He's a millennial through it. Well, he's a Gen X millennial, very on the cusp. But, you know, he very much, you know, understands, oh, that opinion or that perspective that you have has validity to it. Like, it's not like you're sitting here just asking a dumb question anymore. And it wasn't the what I said, it was just the way I said it that resonated. And it's fascinating to see that happen.
That's great. And I think that because, you know, the younger generations are so connected, you guys have been able to kind of shift how you deliver messages, how you say things, because you're so exposed to a lot of different groups and can see how they receive messages the best. Like, this is very across the board, it seems.
Yeah, and it's almost like the empathy is not just helping in, you know, resonating with people's stories, but then beyond that, being able to communicate to people more effectively, which I don't think I would have expected out of conversations around empathy when I first learned about empathy, you know, a good, will have to be 10 years now. Wow, that's really showing how short of a time I've known about emotional intelligence. Anyway, but yeah, it's fascinating. I really enjoy it. So being a professional yourself, you know, did you ever get worried about maybe some of the legal privacy implications of putting your perspective on the internet?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's something I knew was a risk when starting. It was something, and I very much started the TikTok saying, this is going to be just purely educational. I'm going to stay right down the middle of the road and, you know, not really ruffle feathers. And I'm just going to provide education. But then as my platform grew, I knew I couldn't stay quiet on certain issues. So I knew very much kind of what I was risking by making my opinions known on certain very hot button issues. And I have seen, you know, both my peers and as well as myself gotten on the end of, you know, threats and, you know, we're going to call your licensing board or your jobs. You know, those threats will always exist. And, you know, thankfully, you know, I've been open with my employers about, you know, what I do and why I do it. And they're supportive, which is nice. But, you know, absolutely, it's something that I very much considered and I knew the risks of, because it does happen. It has happened.
Yeah, it seems like at this point in time, there are, I don't want to say lone operators, but like, I've had conversations about the report button on TikTok, and I think it's an important tool to have, but it's a misused tool that... But then also, the fact that, you know, a lot of people live their lives online, and then you can do terrible things to these people to hurt them, you know, calling employers or stopping people from getting jobs by just saying complete untruths. It's terrifying, to be honest.
It is. And people take it way, way too far. You know, the mass reporting in and of itself is unfair, you know, to say the very least. And it does feel like you're being silenced in many ways, but for me, that kind of just makes me fight harder. But the whole getting involved in the personal life thing, you know, that can be a very scary thing. And I'm thankful I have a good support system, but it is a very scary thing.
Yeah. Have you ever had an encounter where someone's personally, like in real life, started to do things that have made you feel uncomfortable? And how have you kept yourself safe online?
Sure. I'm currently dealing with that situation now, unfortunately. And it's been going on for about 11 months. So, you know, close to a year, where, you know, somebody who was previously a mutual with a lot of the medical creators that I know is really coming out and, saying some pretty horrific things. And this all started, you know, when this person had demanded that we do certain things and call out certain people. And we said, no, that's not really our thing. And we're not going to do that. And unfortunately, this person is targeting about 15 to 20 of us at this point and is calling our employers and our state licensing boards and has even taken it to very extreme ends with calling Child Protective Services repeatedly on people who are, you know, parents, those of us who are parents. And it's very, very scary. It's scary in that it can affect you. Not that you are physically afraid of this person, but how it can affect you. And thankfully, again, my boards I've been in close contact with, I have, you know, made them aware of the situation a long time ago. They've been very supportive, as well as my employers. But, you know, it does get to be a little bit much when this is just incessant and it's a lot of information, incorrect information being put out about you online. It starts to wear. It does start to wear on your mental health and your thoughts of, you know, is this worth it to do? But then I see the responses on the videos that I get and I said, this is worth it. This is worth it to do. But it's very upsetting. It's very upsetting that people will go those lengths just to literally fulfill their own kind of personal vendetta.
Yeah. It's terrifying to be, you know, especially as you work in a regulated industry as well with, you know, licensing boards and things like that. It's the same in a lot of areas, to be honest. And you lose a lot of your ability to work as soon as, you know, you get offside with a licensing board or an authority of some description. And when someone is sharing those lies, it's like, wow, this is everything's at threat. And it's like you've taken all these precautions, but you feel like you're putting out fires left, right, and center.
Oh, 100%. And legally, I'm not sure how it is there in Australia, but, you know, laws have not caught up with technology. So, you know, Criber, oh my gosh, this is where I am today. Cyber laws, you know, cyber stalking, cyber, like it's not up to date with the times, you know, especially when it crosses state lines, because then state officials will say, well, that's not really our thing. You have to go to the federal officials. And then the federal, you know, FBI will say, well, this doesn't really rise to our level. So, you know, nobody wants to pay money to extradite somebody across state lines for what's still considered a misdemeanor. You know, so it's very frustrating to, you know, have legal, like criminal charges pursued against somebody and civil cases, they're expensive. To hire a lawyer is expensive.
Yeah, I feel that one. It's a terrible thing to have to, like, and I suppose Australia's lucky because we have so few states. But, you know, like, especially, you know, communicating across state lines, and obviously states have a lot of power in the US as well. So, you know, it's a fascinating part of, it's like, I want to have justice, but is justice worth the thousands of dollars I'm going to have to pay a lawyer rather than, you know, maybe I can wait it out until this person's born, you know? And it's a hard balance to get. I would never want to put anyone in that position, regardless of how I felt about them.
Yeah, it really opens up your eyes to kind of how cruel some people can be and kind of what the lengths they're willing to go to really just destroy somebody else's life. All because they were just personally offended for whatever reason. Because it's not somebody you meet in day-to-day life. It's not somebody that you've had any kind of relationship with. It's just they feel personally offended. And this is the lengths that they're willing to go. It's that the punishment is not fitting the quote unquote crime, so to speak here. It can be very, very frustrating. And when it's a whole group of people and it's so clear and obvious that this person has crossed the line in so many ways and you're being told there's not much you can do about it. That's where we're really frustrated because it's a very large group of us, you know, very, very well-known creators. So it's been very frustrating.
Yeah, I'm shifting gears a little bit, but, you know, how has your time on social media informed your professional practice? I would have no idea. I'm unemployed at the moment, so.
You know, honestly, not a whole lot. I try very hard to keep the two separate, with the exception of, you know, being a little bit or having a bit of a better understanding on certain topics, being able to hear people talk about, oh, this is how I experience my complex trauma, or this is how I experience my ADHD or bipolar disorder. Hearing just a larger group of people being on social media talk about their experiences, that has helped, I think, my practice with my own patients, because I can hear them kind of saying the same things. And that makes me say, well, okay, this is something that is, that's, it's not just happening to this person. It's actually happening maybe on a larger scale. So in that ways, yes. And it's influenced it in a positive way. I can't say that it's, you know, negatively influenced my practice at all. I try to keep the two very, very separate, and I don't talk about what I do on social media at work. Most people at my job, I don't, if they have seen me, they haven't said anything.
Wow.
I some of my patients have seen me though, and they like, they're like, ah, you know, they get all excited. But yeah, like at my full-time job, if people have seen me, they haven't said anything.
It's weird. It feels like someone was saying it's a very Australian thing and maybe a very LA thing as well. It's like, you see an influencer, but you pretend to not notice that the influencer is like, or famous person, you know, celebrity is right in front of you. And sometimes I feel like that in like certain situations. I'm like, I gotta pretend. Well, I was flying back from the US at the end of July. And apparently Matt Damon was on the same flight that I was on. And it was just like, didn't find out until we were getting off the plane. And the lady who was sitting beside me goes, oh yeah, while you were sleeping, someone turned around to us and told us that apparently Matt Damon was sitting up in business class. I'm like, oh, you know, but like at the same time, like the curiosity in me and like having being in the US and I've lost a little bit of the whole Australian staunch, you know, filter. It's like, ooh, I wonder if I could spot Matt Damon. He must have gone through customs and security so quickly, because I did not see anyone who looked remotely like Matt Damon. But like at the same time, it's that weird thing of like, huh, this person's really famous, at least, or like really important to me, and I've seen them, you know, but they probably don't know who I am. I'm gonna pretend I don't know them. Or, you know, don't know so much about them already.
I wish I was able to be cool like that. I'm always the type to go up to somebody. You know, and I live so close to New York City that, you know, when I am in New York, you always see somebody. You always see somebody, you know, and it's, it can be really cool. But yeah, and ironically enough, you know, the only time I've ever been like, quote unquote, recognized out in public, it's been one time. And it was maybe about a month and a half ago at a Renaissance fair that I went I took my family to. It was very like out of, it was the first time it ever happened. And it was a very odd experience. I mean, wonderful, but very odd. But it's only happened once.
Trust a Ren fair to expose, you know, a TikTok, you know, creator. Of all things, I don't know whether it's a big thing in the US, but Ren fairs seem to be like this huge thing that I didn't even realize, or something that's made like a huge comeback in recent years of like people going, I'm going to the Ren fair. So much Ren fair content. My friends in the States go all the time, and I'm like, not a thing here in Australia at all. Very fascinating.
Really? And it's, you don't have to be super hardcore to go. And you're not, it's not looked down upon if you're not super hardcore. Like, we go dressed like this. Like, you know, we're not in costumes or anything. But my daughter loves, like, seeing the princesses and the people dressed as fairies and queens. And she thinks this is, like, a royalty. But, yeah, one of the vendors there, I was asking them about something I was looking at. And I just heard, oh, are you the Gen Z and the Gen A honey badger lady?
Oh, wow. What a great way to describe your content.
I see. That was like, it wasn't like, are you the person who discusses mental health? You're like, you're the Gen A honey badger lady. And I lifted up my glasses and I'm like, yeah. And that was how I was recognized. It was so funny. And my husband, who's not on TikTok, he's not on any social media. He hates social media, is standing there. He doesn't even know what kind of content I make, That's how removed. So he's listening to this and he's like, the look on his face, he's like, what is going on here? What is my daughter, what is my wife talking about?
I love when people get recognized for whatever they do and people try to like summarize what you do in a sentence and it turns out to, you know, Gen A honey badger or, you know, it's fascinating what people like default to of like, oh, this is what I remember you for. It's the rawest like reaction you could possibly get.
Oh yes. Oh yes. And that was it. And I knew that that would be it if it did happen, which it totally did. Wasn't expecting it. And then it just happened. And my daughter she knows what I do and she always wants to try to get, so she felt very vindicated and she was like, yes, this is my mommy. And you know, she talks about this stuff, but my husband's standing there going, what is going on here? Oh, I send my videos and the one with the snake and the one with the kid holding the squirrel. My husband's just like, what are these people talking about? It was funny. It was definitely funny. And then I talk about it after that. We walked away from the stand and I just was like, so what are we going to next? And we just kept it moving because I'm like, there's no way I can explain this. There's zero way I can explain this to somebody who's not on social media and doesn't understand anything about it.
It's just like that John Mulaney line. We don't have time to unpack all of that.
Yes.
So looking to the future, what are you hoping to do with your platform in the future?
Oh boy. I mean, I would love to start creating some large scale change in terms of like policies. I am not, politics is not my forte in terms of like my education. But if I can work with people to make mental health services more widely available, make sure that people who need it are getting it, make it so that it's not a 8-month wait list to see somebody. That would be something that I feel like, you know, that would be my top on my bucket list. If we could just work together and kind of get it out there, that it has to be more available because mental health is everywhere. You know, the amount of people who have sought mental health help, it should not be something that's like, it shouldn't be treated like an emergency room. It should be like preventative care, like your physical every year that you go to at the doctor. It shouldn't just be when a crisis happens. So that would be my, I mean, top of the bucket list. And if there's a way to do that, then that would be what I would be most excited about and what I would want to get out there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Laura. It's been lovely having you on.
Thank you so much. I was very honored when you asked me. And again, this is all kind of new that somebody would ask me to do something. I'm still not used to being asked to do things like this. So I feel very honored. So I wanted to say thank you very much.
No worries. Where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. So, I mean, my biggest platform is TikTok and it's That Psych NP. Just kind of like it sounds, That Psych and then the letters NP, like as a nurse practitioner. And it's my Twitter handle is the same. And on Instagram, it's the same, but there's underscores between the words. Yeah. So, you know, it's all virtually the same, but if you Google, it's pretty easy to find, but TikTok is usually where I'm at.
And has there been anything that you've been reading, watching, playing, interacting with that you wanted to plug?
Oh boy, I'm not, you know what? If you do have a lot of people in the States listening, there is a new organization I started, you know, working alongside of, and it's a mentor service for teens created by Gen Z for Gen Z, and it's called Link. And I love the concept of it. I was so impressed. I've been, you know, working closely with the CEO and president and vice president. It's an amazing service, and I urge people to check it out. It's basically it's a trained mentor for your teen that your teen can contact 24/7 through video chats or text messaging. And while it's not a therapist, it's somebody who understands exactly what they're going through, what generational challenges they're having. So the feedback that I've gotten from people who've utilized that service has been fantastic. So I do want to urge everybody to check them out. Their website is withlink.io. So I can send you the spelling of it, but it's withlink.io, and it's amazing. So if your kid's kind of going through a rough time or feel like they need somebody to talk to, I definitely urge people to check this out.
Amazing. I think that that'll be a really great one. Regardless of who's listening, I think that there's probably someone you could always suggest that kind of thing to. Yes. It's, and it's always like, I always forget how beneficial having people trained to have these kind of conversations are. It's so fascinating.
Yes.
You can find me at sam.the.journalist on Instagram and on TikTok, and samobijournalist on Twitter. Wow, is it evident that I don't say this enough? I don't know. I've just finished my university degree, so I'm in this weird state of limbo where I'm watching TV series and movies without any real consequences yet while trying to find jobs. So,
best of luck.
I know, yeah. I didn't watch a lot of TV as a child, so I've started rewatching like big TV series, big sitcoms that I missed out on. And I was rewatching Modern Family, and I've actually really enjoyed rewatching Modern Family. I don't like The Office, and I worry that like a lot of US sitcoms are like very Office-esque, and not my style of comedy, don't particularly like it. But Modern Family is just so much fun, and it felt so realistic having like I come from a big family, so like having lots of different aspects of the family and what lots of different social dynamics play out, it's amazing.
Yes, and if you're looking for an even kind of an older one, my favorite of all time, again, because I'm an elder millennial, is Friends. So I would highly, if you haven't seen Friends yet,
it's next on my list. Yeah.
Oh, you have to let me know what you think. It's my favorite of all time.
It's gotten such rave reviews. I have watched a lot of things that have felt inspired by Friends, like from my vague understanding of it. So I'm really looking forward to watching where it all kind of started from. So yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. Definitely give it a few episodes to start up and get into the characters, because they definitely have their own flavors, but then they settle in kind of. But it is hands down my favorite of all time.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast again. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Content and Capable. You can follow the podcast socials at Content, the letter N, Capable on Instagram and Twitter. You can send an email to contentandcapablepod@gmail.com. Please give us a review on iTunes or Spotify to help others know that you love this podcast. The art was done by Opia. You can follow them at opia_art_. Opia is spelled O-P-I-A. Feel free to message them about making art for your project. Our music was written, recorded, and edited by Isabel Strauss-Riggs. You can find Izzy at Kane_I. That's I is in the body part. On Instagram and Twitter, and on YouTube at KaneI with no spaces. Feel free to message her about making music for your project or editing your podcast.
Coffee. Tea. Honor. Cabbage. Long ago, the four elements lived in harmony. Then, shit went totally cray when the Avatar attacked. Only the Cabbage Man, merchant of fine cruciferous vegetables, could stand against his trolling. But when the world needed some dank veg, he vanished. 10 years have passed, and my partner and I have started a new podcast.
My Cabbages! An Avatar podcast.
A weekly show about Avatar the Last Airbender. Whether it's Sokka's new line of cologne.
Hey, look at you, sitting there on a seal. Well, now look it back at me. I'm on an even bigger seal. Now look away.
D&D-related antics.
You have to make an acrobatics check for that. And Aang just, like, unzips his pants and whips out his D20s. He's just like, I got this.
Or randomly breaking into song.
Sokka, bending waterfall.
We'll stumble our way through the greatest show ever made, one episode at a time.
You can reach us at CabbageCast, which is our Twitter. Or
subscribe wherever you catch pod.
Rotten cabbages? What kind of slum do you think this is?
Content and Capable is a podcast all about answering the question, how do you adult? Don't forget to rate and review, and I will see you next Monday for another episode.
Dave X Media.